Last month on Our Town, we brought in a couple of the members of the board of the Oregon Coast Humane Society to talk with some of the issues that have been going on there, to hear the other side of it. There have been plenty of news articles in the Cayuse Law News regarding it, but we haven't really taken a chance to sit down with folks. And so this month, we're bringing in Scott Bailey and Jack Hannigan to talk with us about some of the things. And Scott is a former board member. Was been on many years ago. I guess how long's it been, Scott?
I left in August of 2015.
Okay,
and I was on for about a year.
For about a year.
Yeah.
Okay, and Jack, you're not a board member, but you are a volunteer, and you work closely at the shelter sometimes, and have animals from time to time that you care for.
Well, I volunteer at the shelter once a week, cleaning dog kennels, and I help transport the animals to get veterinary care at Vanita. And I'm also a recovery person that helps when they have the spay-neuter clinics. I help the animals through the recovery process.
As they come out of anesthesia.
Correct.
And stuff like that. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Been doing that for about 3.5 years.
Well, let's just jump right on into this, because there has been so much out there. And I don't want to deal with conjecture, and I don't want to deal with what people's opinions are. I just kind of want to know, you know, how this all started. Let's go back to 2014. Scott, when you got on the board, how long had you been interested in the Humane Society when you decided to join the board?
I started volunteering it's a little unclear exactly when it was, end of 2013, beginning of 2014. I just started volunteering at the shelter. I made some donations. Actually, it was inspired a little bit by my wife, who told me that I should really do it after we had a dog that died untimely. She had cancer, and it was, dog I was very close to. And so she suggested that I spend some time volunteering at the shelter. So once I got into the shelter and got to know Barb Hall, who was the manager at the time, a little bit, and she kind of encouraged me to do a couple of different things, mostly involved walking dogs and things like that. And eventually one thing led to another, and I got put in touch with Frankie Stewart, I'm not sure if that's still her last name, and a couple other people who were on the board, and they invited me to a couple of meetings and eventually asked me to join. And that happened over a period of about 6 months, I think. And I think probably the fact that I'm an attorney maybe attracted me to them, but anyway, that's the basis, I guess, of my involvement.
How were things back then? I mean, it's just a short few years ago, but how was the organization? How was the shelter? How were things going back then from an outsider looking in, or someone who recently got into the inside?
I think I had a really optimistic outlook for things, and I don't remember any negative issues, at least when I was first involved with the organization. It really wasn't until I was on the board and I started getting, I liked all the people that worked at the shelter. I don't think there were any problems in terms of personnel I don't know how to answer that question, because there was a lot that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still very, very new to the organization. I had only been here in Florence for about 5 years at that time. And once I got onto the board and I started spending more time, I guess, just getting to know the organizational structure and the policies and procedures and the role of the board and the role of the people in the shelter management and so forth, it started to, some of these things that were, I guess, issues that maybe different individuals have with the organization started to come out. I'm not giving you very good answers here, because I was spending a lot of time just learning about things.
Right.
And I tend to view organizations, any organization, as diverse as this, and in a community as diverse as this, and it's not easy running an animal welfare organization, as, you know, a collection of people that are all going to have different views on things and different opinions, and sometimes those are going to clash. So it's very difficult to kind of sort out things that are truly real problems and from the things that are really just maybe one person's bone to pick.
There's some quirkiness that goes on in all organizations.
Sure.
Like that, and people that have different ways about them, and sometimes they clash with each other, but it's not necessarily what would be considered a problem issue.
Right. And, you know, I mean, this organization has had management challenges for years. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I wouldn't say I was terribly aware of all of those things back then. I mean, it's taken a lot of time for me to become more familiar with that. And a lot of those management issues are nobody's fault. You have to work with the personnel whom you have. You have to take the volunteers who are willing to give time. And sometimes those circumstances are just not perfect. But, I think to maybe bring it around to what's going on now, that all organizations are going to have these kinds of problems. They're going to have internal disagreements. They're going to have difficulties and challenges because we're all people and we're running these things as people. And it's a volunteer-driven organization and problems happen. That is not the problem or the issue I think that people are having today. The issue is how you respond to those problems. It's how you engender support for finding solutions to those problems that really defines how well an organization is being governed. And to me, I mean, if you want to look at why, I can only speak for myself, but why I have issues with the current governance of the board, it's not because there are problems with the organization, but it's because of how they're responding to them, or in many cases not responding to the problems.
All right, well, I want to dig a little bit deeper into that too, but I want to talk to Jack for a second. Mm-hmm. Here and Jack, about your experience there. I mean, you know, you've been inside the shelter, you've worked within the shelter. How have you viewed things in the past, you know, several months or longer than that, if you can talk about that?
I've been working there continuously for 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And I love the people there that work there. They're passionate, compassionate, interested, and concerned. And the shelter, in my opinion, my job was to keep it clean. And every time I went in there, sometimes I went and I said, it's already clean. How often do they clean this place? Because I go in there and I don't see anything really that is a big mess to be cleaning up. But every day, twice a day, you wash down the kennels and you bleach the floors and you take care of the animals. And I didn't see any issues as far as cleanliness or mistreatment the entire time I've been there.
Well, see, and that seems to be, that was from the several meetings I went to, that was kind of one of the big issues, was there was this big deal that the animals were in filthy conditions. But you're saying that's not necessarily
not when
the case.
I was there.
Right.
Now, the people that have issues were informing me that I wasn't seeing the real situation. So
you just happened to get there and everything was clean and hunky-dory.
Yeah, and they kind of said they wanted to make it look like that, and I kind of went, I'm just cleaning cages.
Yeah.
Now, what are they going to, I'm not the
why are they picking on you to make it look good?
Yeah. Why would they just pick me to make it look good? And I go in there, I walked animals and I walked in there, and don't get me wrong, I see things that I would change if I was involved, but
who wouldn't? Yeah.
But I got to tell you that I don't have any problems with my personal vision of how the animals were being taken care of and the cleanliness. There were issues with the way the outdoors was being kept up because, you know, it was pretty unkept. I'll tell you, when it rains, those poor dogs are out there in mud and high grass and who knows what.
Right.
That's changed all of a sudden. Now it's changed. But, I mean, I've seen issues, but nothing that was going to really seriously affect the health of the animals, in my personal opinion.
All right. Well, Jack, Scott, let me ask you a lawyer question, or maybe something that may be a lawyer question. You have an extremely volatile situation in a meeting. And it's something that's been going on for, you know, several months now. I mean, especially
since August,
really hit heavy. You have a client and you talk to the client and you say, look, we got to find a way to calm this down. But you have to say things that will not legally get you in trouble. Is that something that can happen in those meetings? Because, I, you know, sitting through the meetings, I've noticed that. Obviously, and I talked with Ed about this. I said, Ed, when you fold your arms and you sit back in your chair, you look like you're being defiant. And I mentioned that to him in our talk last month, so it's nothing new that I'm saying. But is there something in there that requires them maybe on certain issues not to talk about? Or is it more of a sense of overall of, hey, we need to get all this stuff out on the table?
How much do you want me to talk?
For one thing, I want to know, because there are examples, there are circumstances where a lawyer will say, don't say this,
Okay,
do
so
say this.
Here's what I can't speak about. Right. I have no idea what their attorney has advised them.
Right.
I have no idea how they...
I was kind of thinking hypothetically. You know,
sure.
In a way.
But I don't know how they've interpreted that. I mean, because, I can tell you from my own experience that me giving advice is only half of it. The other half of it is, how does the person I'm advising interpret my advice and act on it, right? Because all I can do is give it. And it's up to the person who I'm giving it to make their own decisions for themselves. So I can't speak to that at all. Whatever their interactions are with their attorney, whatever advice they're giving, I'm sure that everybody is acting in good faith on both sides, that their attorney is advising in good faith, that they're trying to take that advice in good faith.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that they don't make mistakes.
Right.
I think that maybe the easier way to answer that question is to use something that Bob said on your show a couple of times, and that is that he thinks that the board's obligation is to run this organization as if it were a business. I know he said that a few times to you. I know he said that when I was on the board many times at board meetings or at executive meetings and so forth. It's a bit of a mantra for him. Mm-hmm. At least it was in my experience, with him. And I think what you're not hearing, or maybe he's just not saying, is what kind of business is he in, right? Because there isn't just one way to run business. There's different kinds of business. You know, we're not making widgets at the Humane Society. We're taking care of animals, but that is actually not the business. The business of the Humane Society and the job of the board is to foster community involvement, because without donations of time and money, the Humane Society ceases to exist. So when it comes to doing things like responding to volatile situations, if it's in a board meeting or elsewhere, I still think that the job of the board is to come back to, what is my role in this organization? What is my action doing to foster, I guess, a positive business result? And that is the fostering of community support rather than the fomenting of community anger. And it seems to me like they're doing the latter. Now, if they have certain topics that they don't want to discuss at a board meeting, they don't have to do that. They can make that decision. This is a private organization. The bylaws require them to have a meeting, but they don't require them to discuss everything at the meeting. They allow the members to appear to be present at the meeting, but they don't necessarily require the board to answer certain questions. It isn't so much whether they talk about things that they shouldn't talk about, it's how they respond when some of those items are asked. So if somebody asks a question, let's just hypothetically say about a personnel issue, which is confidential as far as an employee is concerned, the response that they've been giving is to sit there, as you described, with their arms folded and not say anything at all, when they could simply say, look, I understand your concern about something like that, and I can see why you might want to ask something about that. I simply can't talk about it.
Right.
If I tell you, when I listened to the show that your interview that you did with them last month, probably half the time I thought to myself, why didn't they say these things in August at the August board meeting?
In other words, you were hearing things that would have been helpful to have been heard in August.
If they said to you, our attorney advised us not to talk about certain things at the board meeting. If they had said that in response to questions at the board meeting, now maybe not in August because I don't think they had hired their attorney by then.
Right.
But after that, if they had simply said, look, I can't talk about this because our attorney advised us not to. And I know they said it once at one of the board meetings at the beginning, but people were still asking. And, they actually answered some of your questions. You asked them about the covered areas in the yard, and Jackie actually gave a pretty good answer that if they had simply said that in August, they could have probably avoided their complaint that these questions keep being brought up at every meeting.
Right.
And yeah, I guess I don't think there's any legal pitfalls there. I mean, go back to your original real question there is what's the legal landscape here? I don't think there is one. I think that it's important for the board to understand what is and is not appropriate topic of conversation for a board meeting. But beyond that, I don't think the problem is what they're saying. I think the problem is how they're saying it or not saying it.
Let me address a little bit of this from the inside that I've heard from the employees, and I'm not going to mention any names,
no,
but
please.
It's pretty much universal that they're afraid. They're afraid, based on some of the accusations that were made, both on the management of the shelter level and certain employees, that if a new board came in, the whole staff would be fired. So they're supporting the board based on that issue of being supporting their jobs. Mm-hmm. And they've told me that.
Right.
And I agree with them. You know, I'm fostering a dog, and I'm worried that if I say something bad, maybe that the dog won't be able to be fostered by me anymore as a retaliation. I really don't think that would happen, but there's a fear there.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Yeah, maybe maybe unrecognized if to happen, but you're
yeah,
in but the back
you,
of your
you
mind.
Know, it's back yeah. in your mind saying if yeah. I say something, it's going to be – but I'm not going to – I mean, if that happens, that's fine. I'll deal with it. But I don't think that would happen. But the employees themselves didn't want to be put in the spotlight and have because there were certain issues being presented about their competency, and they were having some stress, a significant stress. Because mm-hmm. I'd go in there and they'd be crying or something like that was going on.
Right. And the questions about their competency came up from other volunteers?
Yes.
Yes. Because of situations that you say you didn't see, like cleanliness.
Yeah, I didn't see those things. They brought them up to me, and I looked for them. I did. They have a. But I'll tell you what: these volunteers worked there a lot more than I did. I mean, these were committed volunteers that they were so passionate about taking care of these animals. A group of them, and I respect them very, very much because I mean these people are. Animal lovers, let me tell you. And some things were beginning to happen in there that were restricting their abilities to do what they want to do. And that started, in my opinion, this animosity between the management and the board. Now, I'm not saying that is exclusively what happened, but that's
right.
where it started. Some things started to happen that were restricting the volunteers and what the volunteers were able to do.
Well, and I think from my view of it, watching it, is that there's this idea that as things got more heated in the meetings, there was some withdrawal from the board because of the intensity of that. And then therefore, the employees might have thought, well, that withdrawal there might mean that there's some other problems that I have to worry about for my job, as far as my job goes,
right.
and all that. So it's like a chicken and an egg thing, you know, which came first? All of a sudden, all this happens. You get a lot of media coverage, for one thing.
Well, then the restrictions on the volunteers being able to do what they normally did, and then it started snowballing, because what happened was the board started closing up. I mean, everything started to close up real tight. Like, you couldn't even take – I used to take dogs home for a day. And take them over to my house and let them run around all day instead of being in a shelter. All of a sudden, I couldn't do that anymore. And I'm going, "What? Why not?" And they told me why not, but it was a ridiculous answer. It was
what did they tell you?
They told me that they were worried that someone would get bit or something. And I'm going, "What? That's ridiculous." And then walking the dogs in the ocean. Well, you know, walking the dogs, they've been walking dogs in the ocean for years. And one dog came back and vomited because it swallowed some seawater. Mm-hmm. And you know, so no more dogs can be walked in the ocean. And then you can't feed pets special food, little treats, because a dog got sick after eating one of those special treats. And so no more treats.
So is there, in your mind, is there a sense of like a knee-jerk reaction for not wanting to, you know, cause more dogs harm and the welfare of the animals? So one, it happens to one, all of a sudden they go, okay, we need to pull
I
back.
Don't know. I think it was more of a retaliation.
Oh, really?
Opinion.
You thought it was retaliation?
So, yeah. That's my personal opinion.
So it was retaliation for someone complaining about not being able to do it?
Retaliation for coming up and presenting what these people's opinions were, the conditions at the shelter.
Oh.
Because that's the way it kind of came down. It came down like all of a sudden there are these accusations. And then all of a sudden, then there's big restrictions, and then restrictions happened with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you're still volunteering there, you still couldn't take the dogs on extended walks or take them to the ocean or take them to your house.
Well, I understand you're passionate about it, too. But I got to tell you, after listening to this story the other day about on Christmas Eve, the woman gets attacked by two pit bulls, you know, and killed. You know, there is danger when you're dealing with animals. There's always danger when dealing with animals. And
absolutely.
I'm not saying that a dog would necessarily bite you, but I can understand maybe to some extent, you know, that. But
you don't know which dog in there is going to bite you. These are shelter dogs. Right. You don't know what their history is.
Right.
And they all have little different issues. They have dogs in there that they can't adopt because they've adopted them and they bit people.
Right.
But you go in there and they're the sweetest dogs in the world. You're going, this dog would never bite anybody.
So it makes you wonder how they got treated when they got home or something like that.
Or the issue the dog has that the owner didn't address that.
Right.
I have, Gage has a food aggression issue. And he's bitten me a couple. He's not bitten me to attack me. He's bitten me to get away from my food.
Yeah, yeah.
And my finger happened to be there. And I know not. And I go. I know him really well now. So I'm going to kind of test it.
Right.
Well, there he goes again. And so I know not to do that.
All right.
So.
Well, one of the things that came up in the meeting last month, the interview that we did last month, was the idea of an executive director. I mean, how do you guys? I mean, obviously there isn't one. There probably should be one. I mean, isn't that a normal thing for an entity of this size?
Let me address that because, you know, I've been on boards and I've been a president of a board and, you know, operating a board is a difficult situation. And your little comment about, you know, knowing Robert's rule of order would be very helpful in that situation. And that's true because meetings get out of hand and they can last for hours or, you know, if you don't have control of your meeting. The board of directors operates the shelter, in my opinion. They manage it. They micromanage it.
Yeah, but is that a board's job?
Well, not normally. And normally a board is to handle the direction of the shelter and hire a person and manage that person who manages the organization. The board does not normally, maybe the president who's a member of the board or the CEO, but normally, in my opinion, this board needs to get less hands-on and have more confidence or give more responsibility to the people that actually know how to run a shelter. This is a subsection of how to manage a nonprofit, and it's not like managing a for-profit organization. And so the type of people, imagine when you go into that shelter, after an hour of listening to these dogs barking, and I heard one of the people was making a complaint that there were bad words being said to the dogs sometimes, you know. I got to tell you, I'm in there and I'm just roof, 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 and my ears are tweaking and I'm in there going, shut up!
Yeah.
You know, it takes a special person to work in an animal shelter.
Right.
Because you see bad things. You see animals that are mistreated. You see animals that never get adopted. You see horrible things.
Yeah. And there's a lot of sadness, I would imagine.
And there's smells that are in there all the time. Yeah. You walk in there some days and it smells bad. So it takes a special person to get involved in that. And I don't think a board is that person. I think a board should manage that and raise money and bring awareness and give direction. Mm-hmm. But I personally think this board is too involved on the day-to-day operation of the shelter.
Well, they mentioned to me that they want an executive director. And I guess, you know, it's going to be difficult to find somebody that would want to fill those shoes with the current climate that is happening there. How, if this were a perfect world, Scott, how would it best move forward to solve some of these issues that are happening? Some of the issues between the board and the community.
Well, first of all, there are, just to add to what Jack said, I think, I agree, you know, with what he said, is that this board is way too involved in operations, day-to-day operations, maybe to some extent by necessity, nevertheless, I think they're too involved. I think Jackie acknowledged it when she was on your show. She said, we need to get out of operations and we need to find somebody to do it. Until maybe within the last maybe 12 to 18 months, the board couldn't afford an executive director. There's just, they didn't have the money. There have been some large testamentary gifts that have come to fruition for this organization that have changed its fortunes to a large degree, and they can probably afford it now. And that's a big reason why they're talking about it now. But believe me, they were talking about it years ago, too. You can go back and read minutes of meetings from years ago when they talked about how can we figure out a way to budget for an executive director, and they simply couldn't.
Right.
And so there was an economic necessity or lack of an economic ability behind the no executive director. So they've been staffing the shelter for years with shelter management and staff who were animal welfare people, but not necessarily management people. And that's where they're at now. And that's basically necessitated some professionals, maybe who are retired, who join the board of directors, who lend their expertise in little bits that help manage the things. And that's where we've gotten to our where we are now, where what Jack says is absolutely true, is that the board of directors, that it was true when I was on the board, way too involved in day-to-day operations of the shelter. And now I think they can afford it. And is a big reason why they're talking about it to you and talking about it to other people. Right. I think that the governance issues of the organization needs to be solved before the organization hires an executive director. I think an executive director is a necessity.
Right.
But I think before that happens, and the reason why the Attorney General's office is involved is in a role of assisting the organization in kind of fixing its government holes. And I think that needs to be resolved before they hire an executive. That doesn't mean to say that they can't work on it in the meantime, because right. it is going to be a process. But what does
fixing the holes mean to you? Does it mean a whole new board? Does it mean the board reconciling with the community? Does it mean them recognizing that they made some mistakes and that they can move forward? Or is this board done?
Maybe some or all. I don't know if this board is done or not. I'm not the one to say. The point is that this organization strayed away from its governance roots some time ago. I don't know why, but in the past, this organization was fairly well structured in its a membership organization, and the memberships gather each year and elect directors to be on the board of directors, and the board of directors are the governing body. And it happened every year. And at some point in the last 7 or 8 years, that kind of just petered out. And the reason why the Department of Justice is involved, or at least one reason, is because a number of us kind of rediscovered that recently and really would like to rekindle, I think, membership involvement in the governance. Now, the way the law works is that, you know, that's limited. The membership doesn't get to run the organization. The membership simply gets to participate in who runs the organization. And that is a...
So are you talking about like electing board members
correct.
And stuff like that? Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, things came to a head this year in June when a number of the people who are still on the board had terms end. And there were a lot of people who were expecting, well, we're going to have an election. And it didn't happen. They actually canceled the election during the annual meeting in June, right at the end. And then, I mean, if you want to know what caused the current rift, I think that was a pivotal point there, because people were really trying to work within the organization by communicating with the people on the board, as well as the people at the shelter staff and the management of the shelter, to try and figure out solutions to these problems. But when they basically shut off communication, then that's when you saw people start to go public or go to the file complaints with the state authorities and things like that. My solution, or at least my proposed solution, would be to fix that mistake and have an election, and they can all run. And if the people who are members of this organization want them on the board, then they can vote them on. And they're resisting that right now. But my understanding is they're working, cooperating with the Department of Justice in this. And so we'll see. We'll see how that turns out. In the meantime, I don't think that it would be wise for them to hire an executive director until that part of it gets resolved first. That doesn't mean that I don't think that we need an executive director right. for this organization. I think they do.
From a legal standpoint, and I'm not talking about this in particular, but when there is someone like the Department of Justice involved in something, is it kind of hard to change decisions or make decisions until there's a ruling or a final ruling on that?
I don't think it's hard. I think they can do it. I mean, there's nothing stopping them because they're
like, I mean, all of a sudden deciding to have an election. Would that be something they would do in the middle of the Department of Justice?
I think that would satisfy a whole lot of people, including the Department of Justice. That part of it, I don't think is a barrier at all. I don't really think there's a barrier to them acting at all. The question is, how does it look, right? I mean, if they were to make a major decision like hiring an executive director, and there are a lot of people who are currently concerned that the people who are on the board now need to be properly seated on the board before they're actually legitimately members of the board. And
so
I don't want to
get
in the weeds too much with that, but that's right. basically one of the concerns, is that the current people on the board weren't properly seated. And so whether or not you call them illegitimate, that's just a matter of word choice. But the point is that the best way, I think, to move forward and maybe begin to start solving some of these problems is to allow the people who are members, who are paid members of this organization and have a shareholder type stake in this organization, allow them to participate to the extent that they can, that they're allowed to under this organization's governing principles as well as the law that backs that up.
So the way you look at it as being an illegal board is the fact that they went past the election process. In other words, they were legal up until that point.
I don't know if I would use the word legal, but sure.
They were a legitimate board up until the point where
nobody
they said no elections.
Nobody, you know, and I mean, we can, I think this problem isn't new. The problem of how we elect directors isn't new. I think what's changed is now we have people in the membership who are trying to assert that. Because I didn't come on the board by election. And nobody else in my experience since I've been involved has come on the board by election. There hasn't been an election with members.
So it's been appointments.
They've been appointed by the board. Board votes. I didn't even get interviewed. There was not even a nominating committee when I came on the board, right? I just went to a board meeting. I went to another board meeting and somebody made a motion to vote for whether or not I wanted to be on the board. They asked me if I would accept and I said yes. And then they voted and then I was on the board. That's how, in my experience at least, everybody has come on the board. And that's, I guess it's kind of worked, but it's also basically created a division between the people who are on the board, who tend to be the same people over and over again, and the people who are the people benefactors of the organization, the people who are members. You know, membership has dropped like 200-some% in the last 10 years. There's just less and less member participation. And there are fewer and fewer volunteers, you know, coming and spending time at the shelter or spending time doing other kinds of activities with the organization. I think Jack can speak to this too because his own wife was involved a couple of years ago and she stopped. I can't give any details. Right. He can, but I mean, there have been fundraisers that they used to hold that they no longer hold because they don't have volunteers to help do it. There's a big fundraiser they did every year for years, the gala, and the 2015 gala was canceled. And the 2016 gala never happened. And I don't think it happened in 2017 either. And
they're having it again.
They're having it in January, I think, now. Right. I think that's what they're doing.
The problem is it's the same fundraiser
that's
not raising any funds.
Right.
That's the problem.
But, I mean, the point is that you're seeing over time a decrease in participation from the community in this organization. And I hypothesize that a part of that is because the people who are on the board of directors are just recycled same people over and over again, and the people who are the members of the organization are just not involved. They come to the membership. The first membership meeting that I went to in 2014. First membership meeting I went to in 2014 had 10 people. 10 people. Now, there were like maybe 70 people this year, but nobody said anything.
Well, let me give you an example of that. I'm a member. I've been a member. And then all of a sudden, right when all this started coming up, I said, well, I'm going to be voting to help solve some of these issues. And I found out that there's no vote. Well, not only did I find out there was no vote, I found out I wasn't a member anymore. And the reason I wasn't a member anymore was they never gave me a notice that said that my membership was due. I never knew that I wasn't a member anymore. I was waiting to, you know, I don't know when they start, whether it's a physical year or how they start membership annually, but there's no way of notifying the current members that you're, you know, time to renew. So when I finally cut up and asked a little bit about what was going on and is there going to be a vote, and they said, well, you're not even a member. And I go, well, how can that be? I ain't knowing my member. And it had expired 4 months prior. Hmm. So then I re-enlisted, and I'm a member again. But that's one thing. I mean, a lot of people are waiting. They may not know they're not a member. I mean, I'm sure after 3 years you'll know you're not a member.
Right.
But when it gets to be like 3 months after your due date, so one of the things I can do is just send out renewal notices, and maybe you'll get some more members. Just an example of things that could be done better, in my opinion.
One of the current people on the board is not a member.
Really?
Probably for that very reason, because it's Jackie Allen, and I know that she's and her husband have been members for years. But the only reason I know this is because I asked for the membership list, and she's not on it. I'm sure it was innocent oversight on her part. But that's just an example of what Jack is talking about. There's no outreach to the membership.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure after she hears this, Jack, you'll go pay her membership dues. But, because I doubt that there was ever any intention on her part to just no longer be a member. But that's an example of what has happened, I think, over the last 7 or 8 years, is that there has been this divide. And it's really, intentionally or not, been fostered by the people on the board. And we're now at this point where what Jack was talking about earlier at the shelter is happening all across the board between the board and volunteers. They're creating this, you know, if somebody makes a complaint, whether it's founded or unfounded, the reaction shouldn't be to retaliate against that person. The reaction should be to, okay, I'm going to take your complaint seriously because I would like the ones that are founded to be brought to my attention. There's no way for the people who are running this organization to know everything that's going on with the organization. And if there's something that needs to be addressed, I would think that the governing organization would want to know about it. And frankly, what I think is one of the roots of the problems that we're having right now is the fact that there has been no positive response on the part of the leadership of this organization to people who want to bring issues to their attention. You can literally trace a timeline from about the beginning of this year to sometime in July or August, when people were raising issues, some of them, that I don't know a whole lot of about, but they were raising issues of concerns that they had with the treatment of the animals or the conditions at the shelter, or maybe with some staffing issues, or maybe some of those didn't have anything behind it, but they were at least raising issues. They would bring them to the people that they thought were in a position to do something about it, and nothing would get done. And then, we did find out at a certain point that some of these issues were brought to the attention of the board president, the animal welfare chair, and that nobody else on the board had even heard about them. And that once they did, there was a special meeting called in June. It was before the annual meeting, and they, purported to address some of these issues, and they still didn't. It was right before the annual meeting, and after nothing happened. It just feels like, this is what it feels like to a lot of volunteers and a lot of people who are members, is that I can't bring any concerns to the people on the board because they aren't going to do anything about it. And they just compound the problem by what you were describing earlier about how they act at the board meetings. People ask them questions. People ask them what they're doing about X, and they don't answer. It's not so much that they don't have answers. It's that they don't say anything. Mm-hmm. And
You had mentioned before that, you were talking about a different subject matter, but that there was good intentions, like between their lawyer and between them, and how they viewed good faith. My sense from talking to them is that they really do want to solve the problems there.
Sure.
So how do we get everybody together to start doing?
Look, if they think, this is my view, it's very simple. If they think that they are if I'll just grab one of them. If Bob Bear thinks that he is a good person to be on the board, that he brings a lot to the table, that he would contribute mightily to the organization by being on the board, then it should be trivial for him to sell that to the membership and to get elected.
Right.
If
but here's my question.
It's the same with anybody else.
But here's my question. There is a lot of bad blood that has run down that river. To me, and this is just my sense looking down, to me, to do that right now would automatically probably assume that none of the board would get reelected.
But I asked them, I made a proposal to the board in August before they inflicted on these wounds on themselves. That's my view.
Right.
But I feel like their current public perception is largely self-inflicted.
Right.
And
I don't know that I totally agree with that, but I understand what you're saying.
I'm not gonna deny that there have been outside influences that have also affected them. I'm not saying it's entirely their fault, but I'm saying that there are all kinds of things that they could have done to avoid these things. The first one is they could have said, "You're right. We probably should have had an election. Let's fix that." If they had done it in August, before the media coverage, before everything kind of ballooned after what now? It's been four meetings that they've been to, that people have been to, that there have been news stories after them and all of that stuff. Then they probably avoid all of these problems. That's just my opinion.
Well, there's going to be another meeting. So the idea is like, okay, how can some of this, you're saying that the way to fix some of this is to have an election.
I think that's one step. I don't think that's the only thing that needs to happen, but I think that that will restore some confidence on the part of the membership and the people who are the board.
Well, what if the next meeting, and this is all conjecture, the next meeting, the board opens up and the board members say, mea culpa. You know, we screwed up. We made a mistake. Let's try to fix this. In 2 months, we'll have an election. You know, would that be something that would be?
I think you would get a positive response from that. It certainly would for me, you know.
Because it would give them a couple of months for people to see if they really mean it.
Sure.
Or if it's just,
I understand,
you know,
logistics may, you know, cause these things to take some time.
Right.
But I don't know that, again, I don't know how much you want me to just give my opinion, but I don't know that they would do that. They haven't done anything close to that in the past. I'll give you one example about a small thing. They talked about it, though, on your show. There have been complaints for a long time about where they're dumping the used up cat litter. For a long time, they dumped it out in the woods, on the trail. Anybody who's walked dogs has seen it. It's gross, but they had their reasons, and it wasn't a whole lot of complaints, but some people did complain about it, because if you've ever walked dogs, and different dogs behave differently. Some of them like to roll in funny smelling things.
Oh, my dog would eat it. My dog would eat cat feces. I mean, yeah.
You know, so they were dumping it out in the woods. And then earlier this year, they started dumping it in the yard that the dogs play in. And I don't know about cause and effect, but one dog got Giardia, and there was a lot of people starting to really raise the issues a lot. And eventually they were dealt with, but for the longest time they were ignored. I don't think that they actually got people in there to clean up the yard until after the first article appeared in the paper. So that may be it. But even on your show, when asked about it, their response was, well, nobody said anything about it, and as soon as they did, we fixed it. And I'm thinking, you know what? Really? If they had simply said, you know what, we kind of dropped the ball on that one, but we fixed it and we're trying to move on. Now, they have responded positively to some things. People have accused them of things like, oh my God, you've got rats eating the food. They fixed that pretty much right away. And, you know, there was actually some press coverage about that too. And, you know, so, but I don't know. They seemed to be reacting to things in a very knee-jerk fashion that seems very counterproductive to me. I think a lot of people would be willing to forgive the pitfalls and the mistakes that happen in any organization, as long as they say, you know what, we realize that we probably should have fixed this sooner, but we fixed it now, and we would like to hear about these things in the future so we can address them. But they don't seem to have that kind of response. They seem to instead do what Jack was talking about, and that is try and shut down access. I mean, what he was talking about is basically there were volunteers who would spend a lot of time doing what Jack did, going in the back, cleaning out the kennels, interacting with the dogs, things like that. And that's what they stopped. They basically said, nope, you can't go back there any longer. And that's because people started saying, you know what, I saw this while I was back there. And whether or not what they saw was something that was pervasive or just a one-time thing or anything like that, the reaction was, okay, we're not going to let you back there anymore. How does that look? You know what I mean?
Right.
What kind of feelings or confidence do people have that they're actually addressing problems when they do come up?
Well, see, what I would be interested in finding out is, because there's, you know, and I've heard from a lot of people in the community on this, and it seems like there may be a couple people who are consistently complaining, and then there's others who have seen not so much, and Jack, and you've seen not so much of that. But then there's this small group that is causing most of the consternation there.
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
So when I was walking dogs, I was walking dogs maybe 3-4 times a month on a good month. I work a lot, so I don't always have a lot of time to be there when the shelter's open, during shelter open hours, right? But I would go. I actually foster/adopted a dog for a while that didn't work out, and that's a long story. But the point is that when I was spending more time volunteering at the shelter, I was spending maybe on a good month 10 hours a month. My opportunities to see things is pretty limited on my 10 hours a month. When you have a person who's there 40 hours a week,
yeah,
who is the person who is, you know, making a lot of complaints, there are how many volunteers can we count that are spending that much time at the shelter? This is a person who's practically an employee.
Right.
There are a couple people who spend that kind of amount of time, right? But when you're talking about only a few people are making a lot of these complaints, that's because only a few people are in a position to know this information.
Right.
And
so you're saying that the ones that are working 40 hours a week are seeing the majority of the issues that they see are important.
I think that connection is an important part of that story. And then when you add in the other thing that Jack mentioned, where people aren't going to bring things up because they're afraid to.
Right.
You also have to have a person who is in that position to see these things, who is also bold enough, you know, to come forward with these things.
Yeah. So, this is me as a person looking from the outside. I also wonder why you have to have so many volunteers that are working almost full time to volunteer. And I know they don't have other things to do, and that's what they want to do. They're passionate about that. But it seems to me like that's an awful lot of time.
Well, they don't have enough money to support full-time staff to do those jobs.
Right. I was just saying, like, if you had 10 volunteers that work 20 hours versus 5 volunteers that work 40 hours.
I think maybe if they did a better job of fostering a more community environment, that
you
they would
see that.
Maybe have more people spending time volunteering. I mean, there are a lot of issues that are certainly fixable issues with development of volunteers, development of other community resources and so forth. And it's pretty easy to, you know, point fingers. And I don't mean to necessarily lay blame by doing that. I do think that that it's challenging running an organization like this. But I think that it all comes full circle. If the board were spending less time in the day-to-day operations of the shelter, then they could spend more time doing things like community development.
Right.
If
they had somebody that they could go to and say, it's your job to make sure that this is running that way, and I'm going to come to you and depend on you to make sure that happens.
Correct.
Versus them doing it themselves.
Sure. But, you know, it's also a bit of a choice, right? I mean, they don't, on an individual basis, the people who are on the board do not have to insert themselves into the shelter operations. There are challenges on a day-to-day basis from the shelter point of view, but for the most part, people who are managing and running the shelter are, you know, keeping the lights on, right?
Right.
Now, that isn't to say that there aren't things that need to be improved and worked on and so forth, but I just think that if the board played its role and not more than its role, you know, Bob made a comment on your show, we're just volunteers, right? You know, I don't really like that phrasing. I don't think volunteers are just volunteers, but regardless.
Well, I think I know what he meant. I don't think he was demeaning the volunteer role. But
no, but what he meant was, you know, we're not paid. We are not staff. We're a volunteer board. The volunteer board is limited in its power. And I think he needs to maybe actually take that to heart, because I think they're doing too much. And I can't speak for what their intentions are. I don't have any. I'm sure that they have the best of intentions, you know. But
well,
sure,
and that's why I say when I see, you know, the lack of an executive director or something like that, at some point they must have thought, we have to get involved in order to keep this thing going. Maybe not. Maybe
what's the level of executive director versus the shelter manager? Is that like the
The executive director would also look over the stores and so it would be a total, like, okay, I am the manager of
the shelter
and the stores.
Okay,
so
right.
I will look to the day-to-day operations of this, and then when you have a question, board member, you come to me, and then I sit down with you in a meeting, and then this is what we do.
What he's talking about is much more akin. It's like saying the executive director is a CEO, and then you would still have a shelter
manager, yeah.
And you would still have a store manager.
Correct. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
And
I can see why that hasn't happened in the past, because
it's money.
The money.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know.
You can't pay an executive director $30,000
right.
a year.
Right, and have them stay more than 6 months or so, for sure.
Yeah.
If you're...
Well, we have to finish up here, and I'm sorry about that. There's more that we could probably talk about.
I want to say one thing.
Okay.
The shelter is a wonderful place to volunteer. It's an exhilarating experience. You get to see wonderful animals on a daily basis. And just because of all this is going on doesn't mean that you can't volunteer. Go in there. The staff will treat you great. You'll have a tremendous amount of personal gratification. And that's the thing that really hurts me about this, is that they're losing volunteers because of the bad press that the shelter is getting right now. And that's not the reason that the volunteers shouldn't go in there and help out.
Yeah, the relationship between the board and the members is not necessarily indicative of what's going on in the shelter.
Exactly.
So people should be willing to go and be in the shelter.
Just to add to that, I don't, generally speaking, speak for anybody but myself, but I can tell you that of the people who are involved in trying to make changes with this organization, whom I know personally, they would absolutely agree with everything that that Jack just said. In fact, a number of them, you know, showed up just last week at the shelter with gifts for the dogs and spent a whole bunch of time with both the dogs and cats there and tried to make a big Christmas hoo-ha that went over very well. There were pictures that they put up on their website and so forth. So everybody who's involved, I think maybe, just as the last thing I want to say, I think maybe the characterization that there are sides to this dispute is unfortunate because I think everybody involved in this organization is on the same side.
As far as the animal welfare.
It's why everybody is even here having this conversation is because we all care about animal welfare and we all care about making things better and contributing to the enormous amount of service that this organization provides to this community. And that to whatever extent that there are disputes, that these are disputes over internal matters that have become public because I think of the failure on the part of the board to properly respond to some of these problems.
Well, I would like to, you know, as an outsider looking in, I'd like to see a mediation between the group of people and the board. I mean, I really think that you guys could solve a lot with that, but that's just me interjecting my own personal opinion. But, you know, it couldn't hurt.
I can tell you that the Department of Justice made a recommendation to the board to, there's an organization, and I apologize, I cannot remember the name of the organization, but they actually provide temporary executive directors to nonprofit organizations to help them maybe solve some of their management issues and governance issues. And I think something like that, while not being exactly what you're talking about in terms of mediation, might be a really good idea for this organization to bring a person in who has expertise in the running of nonprofit organizations from the outside of this community and having that person come in and maybe make it's not going to clean house. Nobody wants the house to be totally cleaned out. We need to clean up the parts that are messy. So I think, you know, when they told me that, I thought, wow, that is a terrific idea. And you know, the DOJ actually made that recommendation to the board, to their attorney. So I hope they take that seriously as an option.
Well,
I think that a lot of people in this community would welcome something like that.
We are certainly not done, I'm sure, talking about the situation there. Hopefully, you know, things in the next few months can get to a point where everybody's working together and it's all in a good shape. We don't know. I guess we'll have to wait till the next meeting to find out. Scott Bailey, Jack Hannigan, thank you so much. It's
thank you.
Very, very energetic conversation there. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Coming up next on Our Town After News at the top of the hour, we'll be speaking with Lori Severance from Siuslaw Valley Fire and Rescue.